The Good Christian, or Sermons on the Chief Christian Virtues, by the Reverend Father Francis Hunold, translated from the original German edition of Cologne in 1740, by the Reverend J. Allen, D.D., Imprimatur, by the Reverend James D. Ricard, copyright 1891. 11th Sermon on the Order and Manner in Which to Do Our Daily Work, Priest on the 8th Sunday after Pentecost. The same was accused unto him, he had wasted his goods. St. Luke 16, verse 1. Introduction. How did he waste his master's goods? Did he sell them, perhaps, or give them away without permission, or willfully squander them? No, we cannot suppose that to have been the case, for the steward would have known that his master could not fail to hear of it, and that he himself would be dismissed as a thief. What did he do then? He did not take proper care of the goods entrusted to him, and so was the cause of the property not bringing in a large and yearly revenue as it should have done if it had been better taken care of, for that is also a way of squandering goods. What are we, my dear brethren, in this life? We are all stewards of God, the great master. The goods that he has entrusted to us are our souls and the gifts and graces that he has bestowed on each one of us. What use should we make of them? We should use them to do his holy will, namely, to do what he wishes us to do, that is, as we have seen in the last sermon, each one, besides keeping the commandments of God and the church, must fulfill the obligations of his state and perform daily the different duties that are incumbent on him according to the nature of his office or employment. But this alone is not enough. We can be guilty of wasting those goods and good works, like the steward in the gospel, if we do not attend to them in such a way as to make them bring in as much for God as they ought. How, then, are we to perform our daily actions? I answer, they must be performed when God wills. This I shall show in the first part. They must be performed as God wills. This will be the second part of today's instruction. I begin with the customary act of confidence in the protection of the Blessed Virgin Mary and her holy guardian angels. Therefore, the ordinary duties that God expects us to perform according to our different states must be performed when God wills, if we wish to act well and holily. That is, they must be done at the proper time and in due order. To pray when we should eat, to eat and drink when we should sleep, to sleep when we should work when we should go to church, to observe one order today and another tomorrow, that would be to lead an ill-ordered life and to act in a foolish and unchristian manner contrary to the will of God. All things have their season, says the Holy Ghost by the wise preacher, and in their times all things pass under heaven, a time to destroy and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. So, too, should a true Christian divide the day into parts, and according to the nature of his occupations and duties, let each work have its appointed hour. And this hour should be fixed, so that he can say at once, without stopping to think, this is the hour for me to rise in the morning. This is the hour for retiring to rest. This is the hour for hearing Holy Mass, for my work, for this or that devotion. On this day in each month, I must go to the sacraments, and so on for everything else he has to do. This order, once it is established, he must observe, not allow himself to be turned aside from it by any trouble or levity or difficulty or deceit of the devil, unless necessity or Christian charity or decency or weakness and illness or some affairs of great importance, such as are wont to happen with people in the world, should interfere with it. This is the way to do one's daily duty when God wills. Oh, if everyone understood how much depends on good order and what great value and perfection it is in itself, how beautiful it is, how agreeable in the sight of God, and the great merit we acquire by it for our souls, then would those who are in the habit of observing or are compelled to observe it feel great joy and consolation in it, while they who have hitherto attached little importance to it would be encouraged to observe it, and they who, on account of the many distractions their business occasions them, cannot observe it in all things, would at all events try to keep some order in their devotions and spiritual exercises. For, in the first place, a man that follows the example of our all-wise Creator in his external works, since, as the wise man says, he made all things in measure, number, and weight. Thou hast ordered all things in measure and number and weight. The sun, the moon, the planet still keep the orderly course he has assigned to them from the beginning. Spring, summer, autumn, winter, day and night succeed each other regularly as God arranged. Nor will this order cease till the end of the world, when the Son of God will come to judge the living and the dead. Again, of natural products, that has the greatest strength and perfection, which is brought forth at the proper time. A tree that begins to blossom too soon or too late seldom produces good and wholesome fruit. And although sometimes fruit that is produced out of season is looked on as a rarity, yet it is also considered as an outrage on nature. Man, my dear brethren, while he is on this earth, is like a tree planted by God, and he is expected to bring forth good fruit for his master, as we learn from the parable that Christ spoke to his disciples in the Gospel of St. Matthew. Every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, and the evil tree bringeth forth evil fruit. And the prophet David says of the just man, he shall be like a tree which is planted near the running waters, which shall bring forth in its fruit in due season. The fruits are our works, and God expects them from us. But when does he wish to have them, that he may relish them and approve of them? In due season. Everything must be done at the proper time, and then man will be a fruitful tree pleasing to God. And all whatsoever he shall do shall prosper. Good and precious as is the fruit of the love of God and of our neighbor, yet it receives a great deal of its worth from good order. Therefore, the spouse of the canticle says of her bridegroom, he set in order charity in me. Thirdly, the less a work comes from our own will and natural inclination, and the more it is in conformity with the will of God, the greater, evidently, must be its merit and perfection. This is the case with the works that I daily perform in due order, for then they are in accordance not so much with my own inclinations as with a hard and fast rule which I observe through a kind of obedience promised, as it were, to God. And, indeed, he who serves God truly always looks towards him, ready to catch the least sign of his divine will, and to go or stand still, or to do or to omit whatever and whenever it is pleasing to God. Such was the boast of the centurion in the gospel regarding the soldiers who were under his authority. I also am a man subject to authority, having under me soldiers, and I say to this, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. On the other hand, it is a sign of a weak love for God when we serve him irregularly and inconstantly. Tell me, you have a servant at home who is very diligent when he begins to work, but he is neither regular nor orderly in his ways. You cannot depend on him on account of his peculiar ideas, for he wishes to do all according to his own fancy. He goes from one thing to another as the humor leads him. If he happens to be in a good humor, he will do your bidding, but otherwise there is not the least use of expecting anything from him. What would you think of such a servant? Would he suit you? Suit me, you say? I would rather have no servant at all than such a one. The servant who is not able to do half the work, but who is obedient and constant in his efforts to please me, is worth a dozen of the other. For it is an intolerable thing to have to wait till it pleases my servant to attend on me when I want anything done. It seems to me that this might be well applied to those Christians and servants of God who frequently perform during the week works that are good and holy, but without order or regularity, and in a confused sort of way, not observing any fixed time. Today, they get up at 5 o'clock because they have no desire to sleep any longer. Tomorrow, they rise at 8. One day, they say their morning prayers with great devotion on their knees because it suits their fancy to do so. The next day, they either omit their prayers altogether or shorten them considerably. Sometimes, they get a fit of piety and hear several masses one after the other. But when the fit is over, they remain at home and do not go near the church. Today, they pray for hours at a stretch because they happen to feel sensible devotion and spiritual consolation. Tomorrow, the fervor is no longer there, and the consequence is that they hardly say a rosary properly. They read a spiritual book because they happen to find one lying about. But when they put it down, it may be a whole month before they take it up again. This evening, because they happen to think of it, they make their examen of conscience and kneel down with their children and servants to say evening prayers, a practice that no good father or mother ever omits. But tomorrow and the next day, they will be tired of it. Three times they come to the sermon because it suits them, but six times after that they are among the absentees. This month they go to Holy Communion four times, next month perhaps not once. Some days they abstain from excessive drinking through mortification, and soon after they begin their old intemperate habits. In a word, they measure out the service they do for God according to their own fancies and to what may come in their way. They do not serve God for his own sake, but for their own pleasure, nor because he so wills it, but because it pleases them to do so now and then. Thus, the Lord God must, so to speak, wait for their convenience to catch them when they are in a good humor. But what pleasure can he find in a service of that sort? For if he were not all-seeing and knew not the future, he could never be sure of such service. How can the edifice of Christian holiness and perfection ever be finished if we, by inconstancy, allow what we have built up in one day to fall down the next? All this is caused by the want of order, by not having a certain fixed time marked down for the day's duties. Therefore, I repeat, if you wish to do the will of God in a holy manner, and so that it will please him, you must do it when God wills, that is, at the proper time and in the proper order. It is all very fine to talk about order, some of you will say, and that will do well enough for religious in their convents, who can spend the day sitting alone in their cells and have not to trouble themselves about the price of provisions. They can easily observe due order in their duties. But it is quite different with us lay people. We must adapt ourselves to circumstances which change nearly every day. 100 things claim our attention in household matters. Now one thing, now another is to be done. Someone comes in who must be attended to. Business cannot be neglected, and it is very irregular. Sometimes there is too much, sometimes too little of it. If my husband comes home late, we must have our meal at a later hour. If there are many customers, we must spend a longer time in the shop. If there are none, as is often the case, we have to sit idle the whole day. An unforeseen accident may occur to keep us up longer than usual at night, so that we have to get up later the next morning. What chance is there of bringing order into a household like that? No, it cannot be done. It is impossible. Now, be not so hasty in drawing your conclusions. I answer your objections in the beginning, when I said that everyone must order his duties according to the requirements of his state. I know very well that people in business must adapt themselves to circumstances, and that they cannot have things as they wish, but disorder of the kind, since it is a constant thing, is in itself a kind of order for those who live in that state of life and is according to the will of God. If such people, then, observe at least a constant custom in their devotions, for instance, their daily morning prayer, hearing mass, evening prayer, and the examen of conscience, if they hear sermons on Sundays and holy days and read spiritual books when they have the opportunity, if they go to the sacraments every fortnight or at least every month and observe this order constantly, unless they are hindered by illness or by some work of charity that must be attended to, then they do their daily duties when God wills. But they must also do them as God wills, as we shall see in the second part. By this I mean that our daily work and the duties of our state must not be performed through mere routine, as in a sleepy, slothful, careless manner, but with a cheerful, attentive, and zealous spirit, and with all possible energy and diligence, which must be extended not merely to great and easy matters, but also to those which are generally looked down upon and are therefore apt to be performed carelessly or to be admitted. We must not forget the saying of the wise Ecclesiastes, "He that feareth God neglecteth nothing." He does nothing carelessly, but everything perfectly and with a holy zeal. To be convinced of the necessity of this, we have only to consider that we have to work in, that we have a work in hand that we must do for God's sake and to please Him. The greater the Lord whom we serve, the more worthy is of honor and homage, and more pleasing the work He desires from us. The greater also must be the diligence employed in the performance of the work, if we wish to serve Him truly and to earn His favor. A service rendered with unwillingness, that is, as if it were forced from us, and therefore faulty, causes rather disgust and displeasure than feelings of gratitude, even with a common man, to say nothing of a rich lord, for it is a sign that the person to whom it is rendered is thought little of, since his will is so sluggishly carried out. And this holds good all the more when the person who has requested the service is looking on while it is being done. Wonderful is the effect of the master's eye and presence with his servants and inferiors. Go into a workshop, and there you will see the apprentices singing and idling away their time. But if the master happens to come in, there is a change at once. The singing is at an end, and the work goes on briskly, as if they were vying with one another to see who could do the most. Now, if, in addition to that, a good deal of the workman's own success depends on the diligence he employs, certainly he is all the more likely to make a good use of his time. Even the hope of a small gain is enough to make a man take his hands out of his pockets and work. My dear brethren, who is the Lord for whom we have to fulfill our daily duties? He is the great, infinite God, worthy of all fear and love and service, before whom all that are in heaven and on earth tremble with awe, whom the angels wait on with veiled countenances, whom all the crowned heads of the world must humbly adore on bended knee as his slaves, whose least sign every creature, animate and inanimate, must obey. Woe to the reasoning being who would dare to perform a service for this great Lord in a careless and imperfect manner. Hear what a terrible curse is pronounced against such servants by the prophet Jeremiah. Cursed be he that doth the work of the Lord deceitfully, that is, carelessly. It is a most important thing to do the work of the Lord, and for that very reason, accursed is he who does it without proper care and diligence. Our Holy Father, St. Ignatius, once asked a brother who was rather lazy at his work what he was working for. For the greater glory of God, answered the brother. What? Said St. Ignatius. Are you not ashamed of yourself? If you were working to please me or any other man, your slothfulness would deserve punishment. How, then, can you be so negligent when you know you are working for the great God? If God were like earthly potentates, who could be present in but one place at a time, and who can see only what is going on before their eyes, from whom much can be concealed, and who, generally speaking, are kept in ignorance of what they are most anxious to know, then, indeed, our sloth and carelessness in the divine service, although most unjust, would still be more tolerable. But go where you will in heaven and on earth. You will find no place that is hidden from the eye of God. We are in God. He is on all sides of us. In Him we live and move and have our being, as St. Paul says. for in him we live and move and are. He is looking at us while we are doing our work. He sees how we are doing it. He marks not only the outward movement of the hand, but also and chiefly the heart, the inward zeal, the intention with which we work. It is a source of joy and satisfaction to him to see a zealous servant who is filled with a holy desire to please him and is working diligently to that end, while the lazy, careless servant who works against the grain only fills him with disgust. This is evident enough from the terrible words of the Apocalypse. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. And because that is the character of them, I can stand them no longer. Because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will begin to vomit thee out of my mouth. And finally, whom does it most concern that we perform our daily duties with diligence, if not ourselves? God has nothing and wants nothing from us except the fulfillment of his will and his outward glory. The whole merit of the work he leaves to us and for us alone is the reward he has in store for eternity. The more perfectly and diligently the work is done, the more pleasing it is in the sight of God, and therefore the greater will be the merit and the reward due to it. God, says St. Gregory, weighs not the greatness of the work itself that is done for him, but the greatness of the inward energy and zeal with which it is done. He measures out the reward not according to the size of the victim offered him in sacrifice, but according to the manner in which it is offered. A man who is small of stature, though great in mental gifts, is of more account in the world than a giant who is not so gifted. A work that is mean in itself is performed in the spirit of true devotion, and it should be, as it should be, is worth incomparably more in the sight of heaven than a great and wonderful exterior work which is wanting in true spirit and zeal. And our Father, A. Dale Gracias, spoken with a good intention and from the heart, is more meritorious than the contents of 10 prayer books repeated without attention and devotion. Indeed, it would be often better for many to abstain from prayer and exterior devotions than to pray without interior devotion, for by their carelessness and voluntary distractions, they only increase their punishment in purgatory instead of gaining merit. Alas, and can we, then, be punished even for good works? Without doubt, if they are not well performed and are spoiled by willful faults on our side. Yet we must not grow pusillanimous on this head if we frequently suffer distractions in our prayers and other devotions, or if we experience no spiritual comfort or consolation in them. For distractions that are against our will and that we poor mortals cannot always avoid, as well as dryness of spirit, do not hinder the perfection of the work, since we have not spiritual consolation at our free disposal, but rather they increase the merit of the work and its eternal reward when we continue in spite of difficulties to perform them with all possible diligence. And now, what am I to think of the works of most Christians? What reward do you think we have to expect from God for our many devout actions that are in themselves holy and pleasing to him? Are those actions always enlivened by true devotion, spirit, and zeal? Let each one enter into himself and examine his daily actions and see whether the most of them are not performed in a sleepy, careless, distracted manner through mere routine, without heart, without preparation, without recollection of spirit, without a supernatural intention, without any affection or love for God, nay, as a mere pastime, as it were. This fault is, alas, only too common, even amongst people who have the name of being holy. They say many rosaries, at least one daily, and sing hymns, say the office and other prayers. They make the most beautiful acts of Christian virtues, of faith, hope, earnest love of God, patience, contentment, and conformity with the divine will, of sorrow for sin, of the most perfect abandonment to God's will in life and death, of accepting all from the hands of God, etc. And when they have spent hours in making those beautiful acts with the lips, they very often have not the least particle of the virtue itself, neither faith, nor confidence, nor love, nor contrition, nor true resignation to the will of God. Why? Because while the lips were busy uttering the words, the heart was dumb and occupied with far different things. So that sometimes, if we were asked what we are praying for, we could not say, nor do we remember what we asked the Lord God for in our hymns and devotions. We often go into the church and adore the Blessed Sacrament and go down on our knees before it. We remain in that humble posture for some time, but likely enough, we have not offered God a single act of humiliation or homage or thanksgiving or adoration. Why? Because the virtue of religion does not consist merely in bending the knee or the body, folding the hands, casting down the eyes, or moving the lips, but chiefly in the humbling of the spirit, the submission of the heart, the fervor of the will, and all these latter are wanting. We often go to public devotions held here and there. We receive the sacraments frequently and make the daily examen every evening, and yet we derive little or no fruit from it all. Why? Because the whole thing is a mere outward work, without true devotion of the heart, performed through routine, because we are in the habit of so doing. In works that are demanded either by the law of the church or the will of our superiors, for which we have little inclination, we are generally satisfied with the performance of the mere outward action, while we trouble ourselves little about whether it is well or ill done, perfectly or imperfectly. Even those devotions which have a special attraction for us, which we voluntarily undertake, when we voluntarily undertake them, lose all their charm and are carelessly performed when they are imposed on us in obedience and we have to do them. Often, too, when we are alone and no one is looking at us, we grow careless because there is no one present to encourage us by his example or to reprove our negligence. But we never think of the all-seeing eye of God. In a word, taking everything into account, there is great cry and little wool. There are many shippers and few figures. Many devotions, but little devotion. In truth, I might say that those duties that are so carelessly performed by most people are like idleness itself and are nothing more than a waste of time without merit or profit for the soul. And meanwhile, we imagine that we are doing great things for God heaping up riches and treasures in heaven, and living holy and pious lives as Christians ought. But we are grievously mistaken. The service of God does not consist in the multiplicity of works. A few things done well are more for His honor and better for our souls than many things done in a perfunctory manner and imperfectly. I hope better zeal for your zeal, my dear brethren, and it was to encourage you to persevere that I have chosen this subject. With the same object, I conclude with the words of St. Paul that he addresses to the Christians of Rome. In carefulness, not slothful, in spirit fervent, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope. It is not enough to do what God wills, nor to do it when God wills. We must also do it as He wills. That is, we must perform all our duties with all possible diligence and true fervor of spirit. To act as you ought in this respect, say to yourselves before each work, no matter what it is, may be, this I am now about to do because my Lord and God wishes me to do it. I can do nothing more pleasing to Him just now than this work. He is present and is looking at me to see how I do it. Such a great God, who is worthy of all honor and love, is surely deserving that I should employ on this occasion all the zeal and fervor possible. Think also, a good deal depends for me on this work, and I can by means of it secure an immense reward in heaven. Is not that reward worth striving for? But I shall lose it forever if I am careless or slothful now. Act as if on that one work depended all that is in heaven and on earth, and indeed, the least iota of the honor and glory of God is to be preferred to all creatures in heaven and on earth. Act as if you had nothing but this one work to do, and therefore put out of your heads all thoughts of future occupations. Act as if this was the last thing you had to do, as if death were to come immediately after, as might easily be the case, and you had to go into eternity, there to render to your strict judge an account of all your thoughts, words, and actions. With such thoughts as these in your minds, how is it possible for you to perform your duties without proper zeal and diligence? Oh, if we could only realize what an immense profit we could make for our souls in a single day while we're in the state of sanctifying grace, what great saints would we not become in the sight of God? Alas, I see now how far I am from true Christian perfection and holiness. I have been flattering myself hitherto and imagining that I have been amassing a wonderful treasure of merits before God by my manifold works of devotion, as I thought them to be. But when I hold the greater number of those works up to the light, I find that very often I have done nothing, and I must acknowledge in all humility that I am lazy and a useless servant. For I see that I have performed works of devotion that are indeed many in number, but very few as regards perfection. Outwardly they seemed good to men, but inwardly they were wanting in fervor in the sight of God. They were nothing but dead sea fruit. I have sometimes held myself to be holier than others, for I could see nothing good in them. Well, I got through many pious actions in the day, but perhaps those very persons, by the few actions they performed, gained more merit and glory in heaven, since they were not wanting in true fervor than I with my piety. Perhaps that poor servant, that housemaid with her broom, renders a far more pleasing service to God than I with my church going, praying, and singing, because he or she has a good intention and a fervent spirit and the mean employment, while I am cold and sleepy in the holiest actions. Therefore, in future, I will never rely on the number of my good works, but will endeavor to perform my actions out of love for God, with fervor and perfection, and as God wills. Give me, O God, thy grace to this end. Amen.